Welcome back to the Athletes for Justice podcast. Y'all, I'm hyped. So today we sit and talk with Officer Jennifer Maddox. She served in the Chicago and still serving in the Chicago Police Department for 25 years. But 11 years ago, she started a nonprofit on the south side of Chicago called Future Ties. And man, once you hear what she does and what she's doing, you will be blown away. And so make sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends. I want everybody to hear this story. Like, share, and subscribe. You won't regret it. I mean, I'll never forget, and in all reality, like, I didn't know we would come back and connect again, like, 3-4 years down the line. But honestly, Jennifer, I'll never forget meeting you during that. I think it was 2016 or 2017, during the first kind of peace circles that I was a part of.
Yes.
You were leading that. And first of all, beautiful Black woman. But then also you had your police officer and you're in the community, you're on the west side, south side of Chicago, like you're serving these communities. So all these things to me, I was like, I need to get to know her somehow, some way, and then started Future Ties. And then we've been able to connect, but like, I will never forget those peace circles. Can we talk about that for a second? Like, how'd sure. you get involved yep. in that? And yeah.
So really what happened was I've been doing community work for such a long time. Been always inundated in what's been happening with our young people, trying to make sure that they have a voice. I mean, they really do have a voice, but to try to guide them and have them structure it in a way that when they are speaking and trying to get their point across, it doesn't come out so offensive and negative. So I want them to really be able to use their voice to express how they feel and to get some of the things accomplished of what they're trying to do in their communities and for themselves. So I started Future Ties like years ago, like 10, 11 years ago, just patrolling this beat, which was 312, just trying to make sure that I was doing my part as servicing the community. And I never knew or thought that me doing patrol would change my life, you know, into starting a not-for-profit.
So what does that even, you said, so some words, I don't even know what they mean. You said you were patrolling a beat 312. Like, what does that mean? So patrol, I have an idea kind of what that means, but what is a beat? What is 312? Like, take us to like a day in the life. Like, what were you doing? And then how did Future Ties get involved in that and your passion?
Right. So 312 is a beat. It's like an area within the third district that's assigned a number in the 10 sector, which is called 312. And that's the area where Parkway Garden Apartments, which is this low income housing complex, sits in. And so my beat that I patrolled daily was 312. It included Parkway Gardens, but it had other areas also that I was patrolling, but that's where I spent a lot of my time. And so just going in and out of the housing complex, seeing the disparities that was taking place, the injustices that was happening around all the young people and their families daily, they didn't have access to programming. They didn't have access to a safe space just to congregate or socialize, you know. It was no playgrounds, nothing there for kids, you know, and you have a 3-block radius of young people, approximately 12 to 1500 young people that were living in these 3 blocks that didn't have access to anything. And so I've really said, well, you know, this is why we're spending so much time here, because they have nothing to do. And so that was the birth of, you know, Future Ties.
What is your background, Jennifer? Like, how'd you even get into, or better yet, Officer Maddox? I think we would call you by the correct terminology. How did you even get into law enforcement and why?
So I stumbled into law enforcement, to be honest. I wanted to be a lawyer. So my goal was to go to law school, become a lawyer, and eventually be sitting on the Supreme Court. You know, that was just the ultimate goal, right? And the reason I had that goal is because they keep that job for life, right? So I was like, I'll never have to worry about a job ever again. So that was the goal. My path kind of switched a little bit. I was working in services with youth already through Aunt Martha's, which is another agency that services young people. And it kind of just grew from there. I started getting attached to the young people. They were coming in from the Audi home or from the juvenile justice system. And they were just searching for somebody to just love them and listen to them and just give them a fair chance of trying to get themselves together and get back into society. And so I raised two boys myself, which they're both grown, 33 and 31. And I have two lovely grandchildren. One is Caden. His birthday is today. He's 5. He FaceTimed me earlier this morning while I was asleep, but I gave him a little time. So I'll catch up with him a little bit later today. But just raising young men in the city of Chicago and understanding the trials and tribulations that they go through daily as far as trying to maneuver just being safe and getting from one entity to the next. And as a single mother, I had to adjust my schedule often so that I was accessible for my sons so that I can get them from A to B safely. And so that kind of carried on. And I was like, I need to try to help other young men that may not have someone in their life or their background to help them navigate the system, because it's tough out here.
And like, because I think we feel it, right? Like, okay, we understand, man, some people hear that it's tough. But when you say it's tough, like, what do you mean by that? Like, what, from what you've seen in district, in is it District 312?
District 3, but the beat is 312.
Mm-hmm. District 3. What is some stuff that you've seen that you said, man, like, this is why I have to do what I do?
Right. So, you know, you have young people, and then it's not just the boys, but that's my focus because, again, like I said, I raised young men. And so I kind of know some of their challenges that they would have, you know, just being recruited by the gangs or, you know, being able to navigate from one community to another community, you know, not being bullied, not being picked on, not be exposed to peer pressure, not having to want to fit into something that's negative, but in order to survive in the area that they're living in, they're forced to, you know, get along, to be along so that they don't get jumped on or something, you know, negative happened to them or their families. And so you have a lot of young men who have fallen into the gang life, not because they wanted to, but because it's a way of survival, because of the area that they're actually living in. They have to, you know, live there. So they see the people every day. And if they don't, you know, go with the flow, then usually something negative will happen to them or their families.
Wow. Man, I'm still thinking about those, the peace circles we had, the listening circles or healing circles that we had in 2016 or 17. And just kind of just, I mean, it was some pro athletes, some young kids from the community, some police officers. I think about maybe 30 of us or 20 something, and just, right, all in maybe circles of 6, 7, mm-hmm, and sharing story. And I remember, like, I could relate. Yes. Like, I could relate so much with some of what I heard from you, but also some of what I heard from some of the kids in the community. I thought we had so much different, but I was like, oh, that's me. Oh, that's me. That's also me.
Right. Like,
how does that, that's what blew my mind.
Yeah, it's like it's a generational thing, right? So we have to put people like you, me, and other people who want to advocate for our young people in place to break those generational curses that they are faced with, that follows them, like I said, from their father to them, to their siblings, you know, and then sometimes to the children that they may have.
Mm. Is that why you decided to start Future Ties? And can you tell us like what Future Ties is and what it's all about?
Sure. Future Ties is really my baby. It's my passion. It's something that I get up and just think about, you know, making sure that we are operating daily. It started off as a simple drop-in center because, you know, like I said, that the young people didn't even have a space to socialize. It evolved when I started talking to the parents, asking them, you know, well, what is it would you like to see in the area? What is it that I can do to possibly help you or make things a little bit better for you? And they were telling me that, you know, they really didn't have access to after school program, anything recreational for the young people. And, you know, they said they scared to send their children out of the neighborhood because just knowing that they come from Parkway Gardens was a target on their children. And so they would, you know, rather just keep their children safe and close and not expose them to anything outside of those gates, which was sad. And I said, we have to do something different because I don't want your children to feel as though they're isolated, you know, all by themselves here. And then they never venture out into the city to learn about any other things that's happening. So that's when I started Future Ties. We started as an after school program and we incorporated field trips, you know, to leave the property, to go to other places within the city that the children had never been to before, just to expose them to what else was out there. And so not only did we do it with the young people, the elementary age kids, we started doing it with the high school kids. And so we're like 6 years in doing a summer camp specifically for teenagers, ages 16 to 18 or 19, just so that we can broaden their scope of what's out there and provide them with opportunities and resources to do more than what they, you know, have access to just behind those gates.
But like, I'm confused though. What's so significant about Parkway Gardens? Like, what's the history behind it?
Well, there's a big history about Parkway. So Parkway started off early on in the 20s, 30s of being called White City. And White City was like an amusement park where we weren't allowed to really go to, but we were able to work at. They had different activities there where we were the subject, the target of humiliation, where they would throw things at us or treat us in a degrading way. We were able to work there. And that started the history of Parkway, but it evolved over time. It turned into a co-op where people were able to own those apartments there. And people, African-American people were privy to live there, and they owned the property, and people like doctors, lawyers, teachers pretty much lived there. It evolved again into low income housing, where then people bought the property and then turned it into a housing complex for residents that were low income. And from there, it kind of went downhill because it became a money factor, whereas people would really buy the property so that they could, it's like a cash cow, and they really didn't put any value into any social programs or really having decent housing for the residents to live there. So Parkway has changed hands so many times, and it's actually up for sale now. And they're looking for a new owner to come in to pretty much, I'm hoping, to change the history of what's been happening in Parkway for years. But that would be strictly up to the owner to really try to value the residents that live there and put other programming and other things available for those tenants to live there, to have just a quality of life, you know, a better quality of life living. It became gang infested, and now I'm sure you've heard them call that strip of 64th and King Drive O'Block. And so O'Block came from a young man, his name was O.D. Perry, who was killed right across the street from Parkway, but he had ties into the Parkway Gardens. And so once he was killed, the family members and the people who he hung with that stayed in Parkway kind of turned that strip into his block. And that's when all the negative behaviors and different things, the gang activities really took over that community. And we started having a lot of gang wars back and forth and rivalries and just many killings and homicides that happened in that area. And so when I went in, I knew all of this was happening and going on, but there's a small element of this taking place, which it kind of affected the entire complex. And you had young people that was living there that was kind of stuck and had to kind of go along with whatever that gang culture was, because there was nothing else for them to do other than to be a part of that culture or not come outside, because they didn't want to get involved in the culture. But it was all about really survival of the fittest. And if you came out, were you strong enough to not get involved in the gangs, or did you get recruited and to become a part of the gang just so that you can maneuver throughout Parkway Gardens?
How did those, that's crazy, first of all. Like I had no idea the reality of that. How did the evolutions happen? You said it evolved from, it started off as white city, and then black people were able to finally own homes, and then it became a housing project, and now it's gang effect. Like, how did those evolutions happen? It go from white city, where no blacks were allowed unless you were getting made fun of or abused in so many ways, to now black people can have ownership, to now housing project. How does that happen? How did that happen?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a long history about Parkway and the evolution of that. And they have different videos on YouTube about how all this took place and how it changed the lives of Black people forever, you know. So just over time, just things just not being so popular for Black people, you know, and things taken away from us, and just not pouring resources into that community. Because I don't know if you know, but President Obama's wife, Michelle Obama, she was a resident of Parkway Gardens when she was a baby. She stayed there until she was about 2 years old. And then you have some other known elected officials that lived in Parkway Gardens as well, like Congressman Bobby Rush. Him and his family lived in Parkway Gardens. So there's a history of affluent Blacks that lived in Parkway, but eventually moved out when there started being a shift and decline in the area.
And so where you live and serve now, how you serve in Parkway Gardens, where do you live in that area? Like how close, what does your day-to-day look like?
So I currently live on 61st and Cottage Grove, which is roughly about maybe a mile away from Parkway. I did live further west on 82nd Street, further west by Pulaski. I decided to move into the community roughly 4 years ago to be closer to what was going on and what was happening, because we had so many different incidents that were happening on a daily basis that it would take me forever to get there. And so I decided I was going to move closer. And when I did, I started experiencing some of the traumatic events that was happening in the community. And I was just blown away by it, you know, because I stayed way west and I didn't hear shots every night. I didn't hear the ambulance flying up and down the street. I didn't hear the police cars rolling back and forth with their lights and sirens on. But now that I'm in this community, these are things that I'm hearing every day. When I'm walking out my door, I'm hearing shots fired, you know, and it's traumatic, you know. And now I can not only, I can speak to it, other than just being empathetic to it, I can speak to it because I actually live it now. And I understand the environment and the culture that some of our families are living in every day. And now I understand why their children and their families have difficulties with growth, you know, especially with our young people in education, when they can't focus on, you know, school life and things that they need to be doing because they're waking up or going to sleep to gunshots, you know, and now it's become a normal part of their reality, which is never normal. And I could never say that that's not normal, you know, and they're looking at me like, yeah, it is normal. This happens every day. But now that I'm in it and I actually is witnessing this, it is their normal reality. And it's really sad that our young people are challenged in that way.
What can we do to, see, this is hitting home for me, just because you, a lot of people move away from, I don't know if the word is danger or when people need help or whatever, and you move towards it, you moved into the neighborhood. Well, I was talking to somebody on the podcast earlier, and she did something similar. She moved to the corner of two streets. The streets were wealthy and division, and it's a place where it was just segregated. And she said, I want to be a bridge. What can we do? What can people do? What can I do to help make change?
Yep, change is constant. Change is something that takes place not right away, but over time. Change happens when we go in and we speak to the families that are living there, and we try to assess their situations, because normally what people do is say, this is what they need. And that's not always what they need. You know, we have to really listen to these families, because they'll tell you, you know, they don't have a problem telling you at all. And sometimes they just need it pulled out of them because they're so used to their norm that they don't ever think that change is going to come or change is going to happen. So they don't participate in a lot of things until you have to actually engage them more often. So by me being there for over 10 years now, many of the residents there know me, they trust me, they call me, they look for me, they check on me, you know, and even though they know I'm the police, they know that I am there as some form of beacon of hope for them to make sure that they do have some resources. They are connected to opportunities that they've never been connected to before, and that I share in their experiences. And I'm a listening ear when parents need to vent or when parents need to be able to express themselves when no one else is there to listen to them. I'm there to be that listening ear. And sometimes that's all they need. They just need a little support. You know, we make sure on a daily basis that we're open. We're inside right now of a basement in one of the buildings. And we make do with what we got. And we make sure that the families know that we're there to assist them if they are struggling with food, if they're struggling with clothing, if they're struggling with paying their electric bills, if they need access to computers to fill out job applications, if they need to make copies from copy paper, you know, to use our copy machines. We're opening up our doors to give them access to these resources that normally they don't have access to or have to go pay for. We don't charge anything for our services, even with our after school program. We take their young people in from kindergarten to fifth or sixth grade. We work with them if they have any type of extra needs or if they have IEPs that we need to look at to give them extra tutoring services. We check in with their teachers at the schools that they are located at, and we have a relationship with three schools right now where we have a parent mentor program. We have eight parents inside of three schools right now, Fisk, Wadsworth, and Dulles, and they work alongside the teachers and they assist the young people with their classroom work and making sure that they have all the basic needs that they, you know, would require while they are in school. And the parents actually, they are stipend, but the stipend piece is not as important as how they are learning the culture of the school and becoming more connected to the school, the teachers, the staff, and then becoming more active and playing an active role in the school and being that person where now if the other kids see them in the community, now they are someone that the kids trust that they can go to if they're in trouble or in need of anything because they're seeing them on a constant basis inside of the schools and they're a part of what's the school culture.
So it's just, I just hear commitment is what I
hear. Yeah, commitment. I mean, and just consistency. That's the key too. You just can't come in and drop in and say, oh, I gave them, you know, some hot dogs and some chips today. They should be good, you know. Okay, well, you fed them one day. What's happening the other 364 days out the year? You know, so we have to be consistent. And that's something that I've been for the last 11 years. I've been consistent. I've been there. I'm there every day. I try to take a vacation, but usually it don't happen because I'm usually getting calls, you know, for something that people may need. I'm training staff right now, which are parents that actually reside in Parkway Gardens, and they I'm building their capacity. Some of them haven't graduated from high school, and I have two that will be graduating in a few weeks from high school. Wow. I had a parent last year that graduated with her associate's degree, and she's looking to go back to school to get her bachelor's degree. So it's all about building their capacity so that they, because they are the real soldiers. Those parents over there are the real soldiers. They're the real heroes, not only to their children, but over in that community, because they're the ones that's living there. They're surviving there and they're just holding it down. You know, they go through so much and they're very resilient. And we don't look at it as if they're the heroes, but they are, because they have to, you know, juggle so many different things as to keeping their children safe, keeping their children fed, going to work, going to school themselves. Many of them are single parent homes, you know, and they haven't had the upbringing that they should have gotten themselves. So they're just trying to, you know, get through the process the best way they can. You know, there's no book that was sent home, you know, with them to say, this is how you raise your young people. They're just, it's trial and error. And they bounce back. If it don't work this way, they try to figure it out another way, you know. So those are Some of the things that Future Ties try to do for those families. Future Ties means we're working with our future leaders, and it takes the ties in the community to hold it together, to bring it all, you know, into one circle, because I know I can't do this alone. I'm not trying to do this alone. And I'm trying to get other people and organizations to understand that we need you. You know, we have over 3,000 people that live in a three block radius, and we need you. And so if you have a program or a job or an opportunity for an internship for our students that's, you know, seniors in high school or going off to college, you know, open those up to us, because our young people are going to college. We have three of them that are specifically in my program that are on their way to college. And I've been working with them for so long, and just recently went to one of my young men's graduation. He graduated from De La Salle.
Wow.
Now, who would have thought that a young man that lived in Parkway Garden Apartments would go to De La Salle and graduate? And he did. And I gave all the praises to his mother, because she was the one who really held him down to make sure that he got through those 4 years.
Can you tell me about De La Salle? Because I don't know about De La Salle.
So De La Salle is a Catholic high school on the south side of Chicago, which is actually right across the street from headquarters at the Chicago Police Department. And it's a school that you have to test into to get into. And, you know, this young man was able to test into the school and make it. You know, he made it. And no one would have thought that he would have went to De La Salle. They probably would have figured he went to a neighborhood school, which many of our young people do. But that's only because we count them out. We only say that, well, they'll go to the community, you know, high school, instead of letting them test to go to the selective enrollment schools, because they can do it. You know, we just don't have that push for them to do that. I had a young lady today just send me the invitation for June the 3rd to go to her graduation. She's graduating from St. Ignatius. No one would have ever thought you'd have had a young lady coming from Parkway Gardens that would be graduating from St. Ignatius. But it's just about being there and giving these young people opportunity. I took her to test for Ignatius, because she was in my program when she was in grammar school, and I saw something in her. I said, no, you can do this. And she had some challenges as well, because during that time, her mother was very sick, and her mother eventually passed. But the day right before her mother's funeral, we went to test for Ignatius. And I sat there in the car with her and I said, you can do this. I said, this is something that your mother would want you to do. Make her proud. And she went in there and she blew that test away. And she got a full ride to Ignatius for 4 years. And I'm so proud of her, because now she's graduating. So these are the stories that people never really hear about Parkway. They only hear the negative parts of Parkway, you know, the old block and, you know, things of that nature. But those negative things, you know, kind of put a little damper on some of the good positive things that are happening in Parkway every day. You know, so we're looking to expand, because we have been in this basement for so long, and we're coming up out this basement, because it's just not big enough, because we're not even really touching a percentage of the population of youth that live there. And we have such an extensive waiting list, you know, for young people that are trying to get into our programs. And it's hard because once kids enroll into our program, they never leave unless they move away. So it's kind of hard enrolling new kids into our programs, but we do the best we can with what we have.
So what do you need?
So we need actually we need people to come out and like I said, the commitment and the support. If people have additional programming that our young people can benefit from, they would always need to be transported because that's a big issue, getting them from one place to another safely. We are looking at buying a building which is like right next door to Parkway, which is it was a Walgreens building. So we are looking to purchase that building to expand. It's like 25,000 square feet. I ain't gonna know what to do with myself. I'm just not gonna know what to do with myself. But we're looking to purchase that to expand programming and to bring in community resources. We want to bring in First Defense Legal Aid to work with our young people who have backgrounds so that we can get their backgrounds expunged and start them with a new chapter to doing different things. We want to bring in many other social service agencies around housing that the families can get support, to be able to write letters when things aren't happening in a way where they are having a good quality of life where they live, so they need to be able to learn how to fight for decent housing conditions that they're living in. We want to bring in some counseling services because we know, Lord knows, we know we need that, especially with all the shootings and the traumatic incidents that are happening. Our families are looking for counseling services. So we want to bring in an agency that does that. And then we want to bring in an agency that works around substance abuse as well. So we know many of our young people don't look at weed as being something that's negative, and a lot of them, partake in it. But they become addicted to it and then they get lost because once they are addicted to this substance, then they don't ever do anything else to further themselves, like finish school or find employment or do anything that's positive that's going to progress them on in their years. So they know this and they're asking for help. So these are just some of the resources that we want to bring into the community and then have some recreational space, for our young people. There's no basketball courts, there's no track, there is nothing, So how do they run around and just let off energy and steam and stuff like that? Right now, that's little of none. So we want to change this facility that's right next door to Parkway into a community space where the families, the children, they'll feel welcome. They can come. We'll have additional programming for them. We can up our enrollment in our teen programs, in our parent programs, in our after school programs. So I'm excited. This is just like a huge step for me. I've never owned something to this magnitude, And at first I was really scared. I was like, oh my God, am I going to be able to do this? And then once the wheels started rolling, I started saying, I can do this. This is something that I can do and something I want to do. And I've been wanting to do this for such a long time because our young people have been asking me for years, Miss Maddox, you got a space for us? Because the basement that I'm in, I really didn't, have a space for them. So it was like pushing them back out on the streets. And it was breaking my heart. I'm like, we got to figure out if it's a corner, a closet or something, you know, to get these kids in here so that they can have something to do as well. And then the management company had been promising myself and these young people for years that they were going to open up another space on property for them. And they never did. And so I just felt like, well, if they're not going to do it, I'm going to have to do it. And so, and that's what I've been working towards for this, for the last year, working on obtaining that space. So fingers crossed, and, you know, hopefully it's in the mix with God's favor that we will, you know, be in that space, hopefully by the end of the year.
So what happens when you get in that space? Like, tell me what will be when you're in that space, Officer Maddox, what, tell me, I'm looking at your face. Right.
I was sharing with my mother. I said, man, as soon as the ink hits the paper, I'm probably going to do a dance up and down King Drive. Just a dance, because I've been wanting to do this for so, so long. It's probably going to end my career with the police department, which I'm not sad about, because the police department is how I got here. The police department was the roadmap to being able to help these young people. So I've given the police department 25 years of my life, and I am so just rewarded by the gifts and the experiences that I've gotten from being a police officer, because I would have never been in these communities learning about what's going on in these communities and being able to support these young people and their families every day. So I am thankful for my time that I've had with the police department, but I know it's coming to a close. And I know once I get the building, I'm going to be spending like 100% of my time there, making sure it's up and running, and just, I don't know. I'm so excited. It's hard to even talk about it, because I never thought that something like this was going to happen, especially myself. You know, I ain't got, you know, money under the mattress or anything like that. And like I said, I'm really stepping out on faith to do this, and I know God is gonna make a way, and we're gonna be in that space, and we're gonna be dancing, and the kids are gonna actually have somewhere to come where they can say it's their own, because we're gonna have a room that's set up for peace circles. We're gonna let them design it. We're gonna let them create the atmosphere that they feel is, this is their space. So when they come, you know, they're not looking around like, can we do this? Can we do that? No, this is your space that you're going to create, that you can come to every day, that you can feel like this is your second home. I want to employ them. I want them to value the space as a space that is theirs. I want them to take care of it, you know, to make sure that, you know, others are helping to maintain the space, the property, so that, you know, we can keep it for a very long time. And eventually I would love to see one of my teens or one of my, you know, parents become a part of the staff where they're controlling everything that takes place. And I can take a step back. Because it's not mine, it's theirs, you know. And, you know, and I share coming up on 25 years with the police department. I can very well retire and go off to Florida or Texas or wherever, you know, and just live and just be like, I'm done with that. But it wouldn't sit good with me, you know, because I know. We talked about a calling, you know, I know that there's a calling on my life to serve, and it started through the police department. And I just never knew that. I took the job on a whim. You know, I took the test in 1993 and never heard anything back from them until 96. And then when they called, my mother was like, you don't really want to do that. You know, you don't want to be the police. No, you don't want to do that. And I said, well, Mom, I want to try it. And she says, okay. You know, so that first year was rough with me and my mom because she was in a nervous wreck with me out on the streets, patrolling, going into different situations, going to shots fired calls. She was like, that's not your makeup, you know? And I'm like, well, whose makeup is it? You know, I said, Mama, this is whether we think about it or not, this is all God's work. Because if for you to risk your own life, to put your life on the line, to service and support other people, that's God's work. Because God wants you to help the unfortunate, you know, he wants you to reach out to people and to bring them up and help, you know, build their capacity. He doesn't look at you as to just leave these people where they are and that you're going to get your blessings. Your blessings come from service. What is the saying? Faith with works without for faith or something. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know what
works,
I'm saying?
Faith without works is dead.
It's dead. It's dead. And I believe that. And so, you know, I'm in it. I'm in it until I can't do it anymore. And even have gotten my youngest son involved as well. So, yeah.
I love talking to you. And we haven't talked in a long, long time. Can I ask another question? How much is that building?
The building is $800K.
Are y'all like, have y'all started raising money for it yet? Or is it like, man, God, whenever it happens, like.
We are trying to raise money now. We actually just signed the contract. And I'm about to go in my due diligence period now. You know, you just got me smiling all over.
This is it. This is why we're here.
I'm so excited. But we're going through our due diligence stage now. I just contacted a few people to get our environmental report done, our inspection stuff done. And after that, hopefully we can go into closing and just, yeah, do this. Yeah. I'm excited. Yep.
Wow. See, you got me smiling from ear to ear. 'Cause this is it, Officer Maddox. This is it.
Yeah.
10 plus over a decade of investment. I mean, when I met you, you actually were, I don't know what exactly the transition was happening, but I remember our last conversation was, hey, I'm putting more into future time. I'm somehow, I don't know if you were doing less for police. You work nights. So like you work midnight anyways, but like, you're like, I'm going all in this. And I got so excited and I heard a little bit about it because you told me, and I was like, this sounds so awesome. And then just recently, like the Chicago Sky, we got a chance to partner and it was like this, your organization was one of the people that Athletes for Justice and the Chicago Sky I got a chance to partner with. So I got me even more excited, but then we hadn't talked. And then, so like we reached out on social and I was kind of busy the last couple of weeks and you work nights as well, you know? So, so we got a chance to connect and like, I'm remembering all the reasons why this is so necessary and needed, and people need a know, but they don't just need to know, they need to do.
Yes,
they need to do, because I'm tempted to be like, yeah, I'll show up for, you know, before the end of the year when we're doing the grand opening. But it needs to be more than that, more than just to show up and take a picture and more than just to send a check. Like, yes, send a check and then another one and another one and another one. Yes, show up and then show up again and again. There was some guy reaching out to, we haven't talked yet, but some of his fears is like, I don't want to be the white savior, not even with this, but just with in general, like helping. It's like, bro, if you got money, help. Yes. And then help again and again and again. Like, don't feel guilt. Like, that's, to me, that's maybe sophomoric would be the right way to say it. It's like, well, I don't want to help because then people will feel like no, if you have resources, give them. If you have time, give it. If you have a mind, give it. If you have an organization, use it. If you have hands and feet, bring them to
yes.
Like, well, you know, the white savior, and well, you know, this kind of model does or doesn't work. Like, I'm looking at the model,
right?
You are the model, right? And the people, and the people that you're, I'm looking at it. So there's no more like, well, I don't really know if it's gonna, and I don't even. It's like, how about this? You show up in the community and spend 11 years there, and then and then will that help you be more comfortable? You know, so I'm kind of, I just want to speak to that person that may be listening, or even that has this mindset of like, well, there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do. Like Jennifer Maddox, you served as a police officer. You applied in 93, didn't hear back, got accepted in 96. Your mom said no. You said yes. Dangerous. Put your life on the line. It was a little bit uncomfortable for a year or so with you and your mom, but every single day you showed up for 25 years and put your life on the line. And then you said, man, I'm hearing something. There's a need. What if we could help? Oh, no one else wants to help. Okay. What if I can help? You're not like, you're not a super, you're a superwoman, but you're not a superhero. You're a person who said, you know what? I'm going to put on my cape. I'm going to put on my cape. And now all of a sudden, look at the doors that God is opening up, because you put your cape on. You know what I mean? Like, it's Clark Kent. It's, you know, like, you just, okay, I'm going to put on my cape. And all of a sudden it's like, that's a superhero. That's super. I can't wait. That's what I want to see. The way the young people look at you, like, I just, the way they talk to you, the way they probably come up and hug you, Miss Maddox. You said something earlier. I need to go back and listen so I can remember it. But you said people want to just kind of sit down and get their blessing. No, like, you want, like, serve. Mm-hmm. Like, you, the reward comes through service.
Yes.
The reward doesn't come just through, well, I'm a hard worker. Yes, work hard. Very important. But also serve and give, and really give your life away. Because if you try to save your life, you'll lose it. If you try to give your life away, then you'll really find out what's real life. This smile, this joy from ear to ear. I don't even know how old you look. You look like you're about 30 something, but I know you didn't start. You're 25. You didn't start when you were like 5. So I know, you know what I mean? So like, the joy that you have has nothing to do with your material possessions, but it has everything to do with you giving your life away and finding your calling. And the thing is, I think a lot of people have an idea of what their calling could be, but they get that call and it's like, all right, it's time. And a mom might say, are you sure? A dad, a husband, a child, are you sure? Or even you might say, do I really want to do it? And then we miss out. And we miss out, and we kind of wallow for years, and maybe we come back to it, but we miss out. And you said, I'm gonna go up, I'm gonna show up, I'm gonna go. And I mean, I'm not sitting here saying it's been easy. And I just started this convo like, oh man, love to talk to Jennifer, it's been great. And then I listened, I was like, oh crap, this is a lot. The trauma, even the little time we've been on this podcast, I've heard sirens, I've heard ambulances, I've heard,
oh my officers. God,
no, it's fine, it's where you live, this is life, this is your life, you know what I mean? I haven't heard the gunshots yet, but I'm just saying, like, this is life. You chose to come close. And so the last thing I don't want to do is to remove that and filter that out and say, well, no, this is you. Like, I'm looking at the solution, I'm looking at the hero. And so anyways, and I don't say that to mean, well, we found her. Officer Maddox is the only person that can do it. No, I say that to say we all can do it.
Yes.
What do you have? Yes. What do you have? If it's money, I don't care if you're white, black, Hispanic, Asian. If it's money, bring the money.
Yes.
If it's time, bring your time.
Bring your time.
If it's like a great idea, bring that great idea. But we can't just sit idly by and say, oh, well, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. No, because it isn't. We make it what it is. And so, man, I miss you. I really do. This is what I knew. I literally said this to myself in 20, I don't know, whenever it was. It hadn't been 17, I think, when we first connected.
Okay. Maybe
16. But I was like, man, I need to get to know her, because she has something. Like, you remind me of my mom in so many ways. Like, this warrior, but a beautiful heart. And I'm like, there's something. I'm like, man, I need to know her. And so, I'm so happy that we're connecting again. I'm so happy that you shared your story. I mean, I'm just so happy.
Me too. I'm happy and excited. You know, that's why I said I have to connect with him, you know, and I said, I'm going to take a chance and send an Instagram message, you know, out. Cause I've been working with, do you remember Tessa, you know, Tessa from Family Rescue, her and Richard?
Richard.
What's Richard? It might be, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But
I do know Tessa. I don't know Family Rescue, but I know Tessa and Rich. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Tessa is just like, so solid with me. She comes out for anything that I need as far as domestic violence related with my families over there. She's helped get some of my families moved out of that area into better housing situations. And, you know, and the connection that I have with her to connect with you guys was just great. I said, oh my God, this is awesome. You know, so circle, it comes right back. So yeah, just from sitting in those peace circles, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, brought us back together. And I'm excited, Sam, and I really appreciate your platform and what you're doing to get, you know, the word out of what community organizations that are really on the ground, boots on the ground, out here doing every day for our young people. You know, we always say our young people, but for their parents too, because we have to work with the parents, even though they may make you go, woo, child, you know, have to work with the parents, because if you don't, what you're doing is going to be a constant circle. You're going to have to keep revisiting the same thing that you're pouring into that kid every day, because if they're not getting it from home and from you, then normally what happens is they steady do what is being taught to them in the home. So you have to get mom involved in the process as well, so that she can understand how we're trying to make the family whole, how we're trying to make the family healthy, and the things that she needs to do to help so that she can be that positive example and that positive role model for her children. You know, for instance, like the parents that I have that are graduating from high school, it's hard for you to tell your young people that they have to go to high school, that they got to get up every morning and graduate if they never saw you do it. So you have to be that example. You have to be that lead in your household so that your children, they shouldn't have to look up to other people. You are that role model that they should be looking up to, so that they can talk about their parents with pride and with their chest stuck out, that my mother or my father was the one that got me over. And that just makes me melt inside when I see that.
Well, Officer Maddox, thank you so much for your, I'm gonna call it what it is, your wisdom. Also want to thank you for your courage, because the wisdom, even what you just said, everybody needs to hear that. Mm-hmm. Parents being the example to children. Everybody needs to hear that. Whether you live in Chicago or live in, no matter what country you're, everybody needs to hear that. So your wisdom, but also your courage to answer the call and to say yes, to reply back in 96, to apply in 93, to reply in 96. Thank you for your courage. Mm-hmm. And then thank you for your audacity, your willingness to be bold and ask and say, hey, I'm going to go for it. This $25,000, I'm going to go. And yes, we're closing end of the year and I'm going to dance. Like, audacity. Thank you for that. God gifted you with a smile and a beautiful heart, a beautiful smile and a beautiful heart. But man, you decided to pick up that courage, that wisdom, that audacity. And thank you, because this is an example to me. I'm looking at you and saying, oh, this could be me. This could be me. And that's why I get excited. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes. Yes. And thank you all for listening to the Athletes for Justice podcast. If you want to learn more about Future Ties, there's going to be a link below when you go listen to this podcast. Make sure to share it with your friends and also subscribe. We want everybody to learn more about not only Officer Maddox, but also Future Ties and what they're doing in the community. And so once you listen, share this podcast with your friends, share it on social media, subscribe to the podcast as well, and then give. Give your money, futureties.org. Give your time, give your resource, whatever you have. Let's start giving it, not just once. Let's do it over and over and over again. And all of a sudden, we'll see that we'll start putting our capes on and we'll be the superheroes. So thank y'all so much for joining me on this journey of justice. I cannot wait to see y'all again next week.